cool. Is there a little microphone over there?
Do the thing!
Hi. Welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast! Oh!
Is this your Wink Martin intro? This is your 1980s game show network intro?
Hey! We've got a great show for you tonight. We are the Brothers Geek! Woo! We talk about geeky
Everybody
things.
Just turned the podcast off.
Seriously. I am turning it off. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, we're done. We're done here.
I'd like to introduce you to my co-host, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
My name is Christopher Schmaltz.
And
I am a brother. I am a
Thank
brother.
Thank you, Christopher.
Geek.
That's all the time we have for you. Hey. My other brother, Andrew Schmaltz. Hello, Andrew. Hey.
Hi. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Jesus. Oh, great. Yeah, we kidnapped you.
You're an embarrassment.
It was an abduction. Woo!
This is an abduction, an alien abduction, because this is an alien overlord. I don't know. I got off the rails there, admit.
Oh, you definitely derailed. It didn't take long.
That was rough.
This is episode 122. 122.
Yep.
We're recording this on December 8th. And this is the episode before we do our meetup, our Christmas holiday special, where we meet up, and I will be in town.
The holiday live special.
The holiday live special.
Just like
Doctor Who, we do a special Christmas episode.
So
Doctor Who no longer does Christmas, by the way.
Really?
New seasons premiere on New Year's Day now.
Interesting.
Yep.
Why don't they do a Christmas show? I love Christmas. The Christmas episode.
I agree, but I think it's a product of not everyone celebrates Christmas, my brother.
Oh, they're trying to beat you. Yeah.
Didn't during the Matt Smith era though? Didn't the Doctor save Christmas? Didn't he like?
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like the Doctor saves Christmas.
All time classic. Episode.
That's a really good one. And it's Nick Frost who plays Santa Claus.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I used to love those. They were just good fun. Doctor Who used to be good fun. I haven't watched any of the last season. Did you watch any of it, Christopher?
The Jodie Whittaker season?
Yeah, Jodie Whittaker season.
Of course, I watched it.
Was it any good?
Yes.
Yeah.
She brings a whole new and different energy than the previous Doctor Capaldi.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a nice job of just projecting the reality that I'm a woman, deal with it.
Yeah.
And they didn't make it a thing, and they didn't harp on it every time that there was an episode. It just was. Some of the episodes were kind of sort of, it's new writers and new showrunner and stuff like that. And so they were finding their feet, but they did a really good job for a first season.
I always wait for it to like come on Prime, and then I can watch it, you know,
because
I don't really have cable or BBC, so
it's a great show.
I have to wait.
Everyone should watch it.
I'm definitely going to. I should add that to my list of to watch.
I have not read anything about what's coming.
What's to come
in the new season? Yeah.
Is she going to keep being the Doctor, or is it?
Oh, well, that's same Doctor and same companions.
Okay, companions.
She has a team of companions. Yes.
Oh wow! All right,
that's cool.
Yep.
That's cool.
The Doctor Squad.
The Doctor Squad.
Doctor Squad is right.
I like it.
I mean,
how's life treating you, boys?
But, oh yeah, it's good. It's good.
It's holiday season, man. Can't complain. Yep.
Holiday
it's
season.
Busy.
I love Christmas.
Holiday season is busy. Lots of things happening.
Lots what of I content was, drops. It's happening.
What I was going to say to you is just like, usually our Christmas, our live special, we talk about the year, but like, I feel like we have to record a Rise of Skywalker one shot. And
of course,
are we going to be able to do them both at the same time, or are we going to like just do the one shot and make our holiday special, or what's your guys' thoughts on that? Because I mean, that's gonna I'm going to be there. We're going to watch it. And then we're going to record, I assume, that week.
I think so. It has to be all about the movie and the Star Wars saga.
Yeah.
That's my
view. I think that's going to make the most sense.
Well, it's going to be like a good wrap up too for like, I mean, it's the third movie. It's like
the end of the Skywalker saga. Yeah. The
ninth movie. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to have to be. I think that's what it'll just naturally turn into, even if we don't.
Yeah.
You know, try to make it about the previous year and everything that happened. We'll just end up talking so much about Rise of Skywalker.
I think we can do a yearly recap in a January episode.
Okay,
yeah,
maybe, you know, if we get rolling and really want to sort of do it.
Sure,
let's
do it. True statement. Yeah.
When are we gonna do? When are we recording this? Because I was unclear about your schedule, Patrick.
Well, I'm gonna be in Phoenix. The 18th through basically the 26th. So we're going to see Skywalker the 19th. Andrew and I, we're going together, right, Andrew?
Yeah.
And then
you and me and six other people that I bought tickets for.
Awesome.
There's eight total people in the squad going to this movie.
Squad.
Awesome. Yeah.
Rolling deep.
Oh, we're rolling deep, dude.
I'm not one of them.
And you then, live in Tucson. I figured you make your own plans.
Yes, I know.
So we'll do that, and then whenever you're in town, Christopher, I mean, whenever you come up or after, I would.
Has mom talked about what the schedule is for Kuka or anything like that?
None of that's been discussed. No Kuka in conversation.
Nope.
So. Okay, so the challenge, of course, is that we will come up. We got to figure out. I mean, I think I have to come up there over the weekend.
Well, it's for Christmas. 21st, and
Patrick, you're there. You're leaving on the 26th.
Well, that's just tentatively. I'm driving back, so I can leave whenever, really. But I want to be back in L.A.
Before. How long is Hannah in town?
She's only there 18th, 19th, and 20th. And then she leaves
on the 20th?
Yeah.
She's on a plane on the 20th?
She's on a plane on the 20th.
Okay. So I'm thinking this is because I have to work and because I probably may only take half a day off on the 24th, and we probably don't want to shoehorn it in on the 24th.
No.
And depending on if baking is happening, my guess is if baking's happening, it would happen over the weekend. So we should plan on trying to record the annual Christmas season live episode over the weekend, either that Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah,
that works.
Yeah,
I got Christmas parties in the evening, but beyond that, I'm pretty wide. I can plan around whatever.
Yeah, we can do a daytime.
So those are the only constraints I have.
Anytime is a good time.
I definitely think it should be after we see Star Wars, because I mean that's just gonna be like a focused conversation.
Yeah, no, right? We'll all see Star Wars and then we're
like everybody's real hyped about this movie. Like you guys we're obviously hyped. Like, is there anything special? Are you guys gonna do like a marathon of this of the past movies before you go see it? Now we have Disney Plus, you could marathon most of them. And then thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, certainly I'll watch. I don't know if I'll watch all eight previous movies. I'll definitely watch Force Awakens. To be completely honest, I've watched so much of the sequel trilogy over the past 3 years. I mean, I think I've watched Force Awakens start to finish at least 10 times, and I've watched probably The Last Jedi just as many times start to finish over the past couple years. So I really don't feel like a dearth, you know, like I need to refresh my memory. Like it's still, still alive in my memory. Both the movies are. So
I will be watching all eight starting with episode one.
There you go.
Are you going to do it in a couple of days or like one a day or what's your plan?
Whatever my schedule permits in terms of fitting them all in, but what will happen between now and the premiere is I will watch all eight in order.
Yeah.
It's dope. I mean, are you gonna include Rogue One in this?
Nope.
in this scenario, or the Han Solo movie in this?
I think just the Skywalker saga is what we're looking at.
Okay. Yep. All right. I've
watched those movies more than, frankly, the main, well, not the original three, but I'm a huge fan of both of those, and so I've watched them more in the last year and a half than I have.
The third leg of the saga. We can all agree, though, that like Han Solo is probably the weakest of the newer movies.
I mean, it has its issues, sure. I think it's the least good. Yeah,
yeah.
I like it. Frankly.
Upon rewatch, it's better than the first time you watch it for sure.
I need to rewatch it because I only saw it once. I only saw it in the theater.
It's better on a rewatch. It really is.
I like it a lot.
Alden Ehrenreich does a pretty good job, honestly. It's jarring because you don't see. I mean, you expect. For whatever reason, in your heart, you just want Han Solo to be Harrison Ford. But if you actually give it a larger chance,
of imagination.
I understand. I'm just saying, Alden Ehrenreich does a very good job as a young Han Solo. If you give him the chance, he really does. Yeah. The relationship between Chewbacca and Han is actually much deeper and much more of a friendship relationship than previously kind of looked at, I thought was the best part of the movie, really.
Definitely fleshes it out more.
Yeah. No, that which is great. It's not just like, you know, Chewbacca's not his sidekick. Chewbacca is his partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I really like how they flesh that out.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like I want to do like one a day. And I'm pretty sure I have to, like, if I do that, I have to start now. But I'm going to do them like linearly. So I'm going to start with the prequels. Ew. Yuck. And then what's the next one? Han Solo would be after the prequels, right? Where does that take place in the timeline, the Star Wars timeline? I'm trying to think.
Solo actually takes place after. No, because Rogue One is right before A New Hope. So it would be, it would be the prequels, Han Solo.
Rogue One, and then the three original.
And then trilogy.
Yeah, and then sequel. So, I mean, that's a lot of movies to watch.
It is a lot of movies. You got to watch. Maybe. I mean, you have basically 10 days.
I'm going to start tonight with episode 1.
Yep.
The Phantom Menace.
Yep.
And
I'm doing the same thing. I'm starting episode 1 today.
And then I'm going to go through all of them and you know what? I have to say that like we're going to segue this into The Mandalorian, cuz the last time we recorded, we had 3 episodes of The Mandalorian, right?
Yeah.
Like we had talked about the third one, and then we've had 2 more, so 4 or 5. Is it continuing to be awesome Star Wars-ness to you guys? What do you guys think of Mandalorian?
Yeah, it's been absolutely awesome Star Wars-ness. I think I enjoyed episode 4 a lot more than I enjoyed episode 5. Episode 5 is really kind of fun moments. You end up, I mean, we're going to spoiler everything, so just prepare yourself, people.
Yeah, sorry, I mean... We're going to have to talk about a little bit about it.
Time marker here.
I mean, episode 5 takes place on Tatooine. We know all these locations. We go to the frickin' cantina.
I mean, that's really not that bad of like a spoiler. It just takes place there. But it's just cool. Like nod. It's a cool nod to the show.
Yeah, I agree. It's very much
It's by far the weakest episode of the 5.
I actually think the fourth one is kind of weak.
Too simple.
I agree 100%. I thought the fourth one was maybe the most entertaining of the 5 so far. I love Cara Dune.
Oh no, dude!
As the Republic shock trooper, she's awesome.
Dude, the third episode has been the best episode. The third episode is so dope. Like, it's.
I agree with that.
He goes ham with taking out the stormtroopers, and then he's got to shoot his way out of the town, and then all the Mandalorian.
Third episode is great.
And then the blue guy, the heavy trooper, just like laying down fire and then flying right next to him. Dopest moments. Dopest moments.
It's a lot of fun. In terms of like a standalone episode, I think the fourth episode is, it has the drawback for me of being, I get where they're going in terms of like the samurai kind of tropes, the Western movie tropes, the gunslinger tropes.
It's seven samurai.
It is the super tropiest of all of the episodes so far, which is not necessarily bad, but I found it the most entertaining. And I like the fact that, I mean, there's so much hand-wringing amongst the, like, the once upon a time, like, I don't know. I don't even call them Star Wars fans anymore because they just like
dickheads. They just
seem to hate all Star Wars things that doesn't fit in their definition of Star Wars immediately. I love the fact that Cara Dune is such a badass and is such an equal to the Mandalorian. I love the fact that it's really her plan that saves this town. You know, he recruits her into this. I love the fact that they're consciously making the choice to include strong, capable, you know, female characters with depth, and you know, and if they're triggering, then they're triggering. And I'm glad. I wish we were in a post kind of
conversation
about that. But
I like to drink those tears. So.
Me too.
Are you saying there's been some backlash about her? I haven't read any of that.
There's been backlash somewhat about her, and there's been even more backlash about the widow that was in the village. That they're protecting, how she is like the best shot and she's so brave and capable and all that, like with no context to it, forgetting the fact that the widow who's like a sharpshooter and like capable and smart is a Western trope that's existed in Western films since the beginning.
She has military experience. They drop that into the narrative.
Exactly.
You don't need more than that, dumbasses. Well,
the dumbasses still scream about it, dude. I know. Yeah, it's anyway that episode. I agree.
Who cares?
Like, I just it, I didn't it annoys even think me about it's that even at all. Part of the conversation. It annoys me it's even part of the conversation. Anyway, I love the fourth episode more. I think it was probably my favorite one. Yeah, the third episode had all those badass moments.
Here's what I'll say, and it's just of the third, fourth, and fifth one. I would say the fourth one is my least favorite, only because it is so tropey for the Seven Samurai stuff, and it's a story that I've seen so many times, and it leads to, but the moments that I really the stuff that got me just cooking was the Empire has fallen and all this like military equipment has just fallen into the hands of like bad dudes, and these guys just have an Imperial walker, and it's like it reminds me of like the Cold War, you know, it's like the Russians, like the Soviet Union falls and all these like Soviet tanks are just everywhere and planes. And it's like this equipment is just like everywhere and people are just using them for their own. And that's how the universe would be. There would just be tons of like badass ships and weaponry that like anybody could use for whatever they want. Cause there is no empire anymore. And I love that just gets brain just like, oh my God, what has happened to this universe since?
Yeah, it does a good job of filling in sort of that empty space and narratively. Yes. I love that.
Yeah, it is
like
pretty
there's got to be just crazy shit happening all over the universe right now that has led from the events of Return of the Jedi to the events of The Force Awakens. We're in between
the exact model is the Soviet Union, right? The oligarchs take over and they become the criminals who are in position to make the most money, right?
Yep.
And to reconsolidate power, but in a economic way.
Yep.
And then they get they're elected, and then they're the electeds, and they have experience in that, and they consolidate power. It's the same exact sort of process that the Soviet Union went through when it.
Well, and then you think about like a character like what's her character's name in the fourth episode?
The commando?
Yeah, that's true.
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune. So she's like this Ronin, you know, basically. I mean, really heavy-handed kind of a way, but it's sort of you know, she's a shock trooper for the Empire, and there's got to be just
for the rebellion.
She was part of the Empire, and then she was part of the rebellion. She joined the rebellion afterwards. Isn't that part of it?
She fought at Endor for the rebellion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
she wasn't an Empire trooper?
I think she's an Imperial trooper that switched sides.
Maybe.
I think.
And the idea of like her being like not wanting to, like, all she has to do is be a peacekeeper, and she's not like into that. It's not what she signed up for. I love like just thinking about like what she's gone through and and she's obviously got like someone hunting her down. Like she's got a price on her head too. And that's why she's all like freaked out. Like maybe she did something. I don't know. She broke some law or whatever, but now she's trying, you know, she's still trying
she
to.
She crossed the wrong person.
Yeah. 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 And I just did like, it just got those elements of the story. I really liked, but the plot is the Seven Samurai, and even to the point where they want him to stay and he can't, cause they're going to come for the baby Yoda. And, it's really good. But the fifth one just kind of, I mean, it didn't get my brain cooking like that. It was Tatooine, and there's like cool, she's, you know, it's a cool assassin stuff and lots of like mercenary back and forth, like who's betraying who, who and guild member, you know. But like, I want more of their, like, I want more like baby Yoda stuff. I'm at the point where it's like, I don't need like a one shot episode. They've been a lot of one shots, you know. I want more of like.
I think with 6, 7, and 8, we're definitely going to get that. We have to get a wrap up to like.
I need a point.
Why is the baby Yoda being sought? Who is actually seeking him? Why is he so valuable?
We have so many questions and no answers, and they keep giving us these like, he lands on this planet, gets into this adventure, and then he leaves, and it's like fine, but like I don't know, like too many of those in a row, and I'm like, okay, I want more of like the bigger plot. I want more,
and I think they're gonna get into that. Yeah. I mean, there was a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of 5. For mm-hmm. someone showing up and finding the body of the assassin.
Yeah, so, that was kind of this weird thing about like who is that and why should we care? Like what I don't know. It didn't give us enough.
Well, we'll get something going hopefully.
Yeah, but I just found that episode to be way too fan servicey for its own good. I like sort of the reminders that we are in a shared Star Wars universe when they are supportive of the main story, mm-hmm. not central to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that that of all the planets, they go back to Tatooine and they are in the bar and they are, you know, in Mos Eisley, all of that, I found annoying, frankly, mm-hmm. because the story wasn't compelling enough, and so it was just let's be as fan servicey as we can, as a bridge episode, and that was a bummer. I mean, the hangar bay where the Millennium Falcon was, really, you got to go that far, So it was all of that was I frankly found annoying because you don't have to do that. You don't in this world with telling a new story. We know it's in the Star Wars universe. That's why we're freaking watching the thing. You don't have to hit us over the head with, oh, let's go back to Tatooine.
But you and I think you and I both know, Christopher, we all know that there's a whole segment of fandom that they love the giddiness of understanding the references in the episode. That is
true.
Sometimes that is enough for them just to watch an episode and just to, you know, the smile that goes across their face when they're like, this bar is from A New Hope. This is so fun.
Right,
you know,
right.
They're really like paying attention. And I get that reference and I understand what they mean by this. And those three, you know, little schmucky, you know, repair droids, we first saw those guys in Phantom Menace and, you know, a shit like that. So there's a whole segment of the population that just, you know, eats that shit up.
And I eat it up too. I'm borderline being elitist.
I think our feelings are really mixed. We wish there was more forward movement in the episode, but it was the fan service stuff was still fun.
I mean, I love the world, and so it's awesome they're on Tatooine. I that part of me is like, this is freaking great. But I, mm-hmm. as an adult,
wants
like a real like rich tale that adds to the universe I love. I wanted more of that. I don't need to revisit Tatooine. But I get it all. It's so cool to revisit sort of the location and be in the planet.
If they had a reason to go to Tatooine, like he had to talk to like the Hutts or something, and it's like that gives him a reason to go to that planet. Like it makes sense. Like, but but like just
Nearby. Tatooine's nearby.
Oh, it's nearby.
So, yeah.
Like yeah, let's
we
just
need to repair our ship. We need to
exactly.
repair our ship.
I got shot, which can I say this is like my favorite part of the Star Wars universe is the ship battles. Like I love the sounds and the space.
They get all of that right.
And I loved the beginning because I was so like, oh, is he gonna get into ship battles? I even asked that before I started in my head. I was like, oh man, I hope he gets into like a ship battle soon. But like I want more of that, obviously, because it's like dope. You're in space, you know? But like, yeah, he just has to repair because it's the closest planet. Like it's a little bit like, okay, there could be a billion. He could be on the other side of the galaxy. Like, does he need to be close to Tatooine? Like, is it Tatooine like an outer rim planet? It's like not.
Well, the
close
whole thing
to
is
anything.
Is they are in the outer rim. That's the most lawless part of the galaxy.
Right, right.
The idea of you're in the western frontier, the wild wild west. That's what the outer rim is the Star Wars universe.
Totally, but like I feel like the outer rim, it's very big. Like it should.
Oh, it's huge. There's thousands. There's thousands upon thousands of planets.
Exactly. So he doesn't need to be close to Tatooine. But if he had a reason to go there, if there was like if the narrative took him there somehow.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
Better, I think that's
So yeah, we got three episodes left. Hopefully, and I mean, leading up to the last episode is the 2 days after Christmas. So that's obviously very exciting. And apparently there is some kind of special preview that'll air with the episode that they moved it up. It's not going to release on Friday, the same day as episode 9. It'll release the day before, and there'll be special footage that will be included with the Mandalorian episode that will that has it's like a special preview for episode 9 will air with the Mandalorian episode.
So I want to tell you guys something that I'm starting to do, and I think this is a better way to go. Is I get sick of watching trailers over and over, and I think I'm doing this too much. I've been ruining movies for myself because I see them too much. So I haven't watched the latest Rise of Skywalker trailer because I don't want to see it. Like,
okay.
I'm trying to keep myself like without bias, you know, or not expecting things, you know, and even these new trailers that like we're going to talk about later in the episode, I'm only going to watch once. I've only watched the Black Widow trailer once, you know, and that's it. Never going to watch it again because like I'm the kind of person that remembers stuff and I don't want to like anticipate that like. Seeing that scene, especially if I watch it a few times, and with the footage coming out for the Mandalorian, like, do I want to watch the scene that they're adding? Is it just, can I just wait for the movie to come out and then it just be in the movie?
So just fast forward past it, dude.
I think I'm going to. I'm going to skip it and then just watch the movie as it is without anticipation.
There you go.
So
whatever's gonna float your little boat there, buddy. Leading up to it.
Well, okay. So
I think both approaches are viable, right? Absorb and go frame by frame through. You know, again, the trailers, they have one specific purpose, which is to foment interest, right?
Yep.
Capture interest, but also the new approach to a lot of direct trailers for directors is misdirection.
Yeah.
Well,
we learned. I mean, DC and Marvel
has been doing that for years. There is footage that appears in Marvel trailers that they do not intend to include in the movie.
Right.
They put it in the trailer to misdirect people, which is wild.
And I think that studios obviously view trailers as necessary.
Yeah.
To build energy, and I think directors are catching on that the problem with the trailers. Is that exactly what Patrick's talking about? Is now people can watch them at their leisure 150 times.
Yep.
And so what it does is it foments the conspiracy theory, the narrative speculation.
Right.
Often not in a good way.
Yeah.
Often not in a good way.
I mean, so we just lead into our, we have like, four trailers to talk about, and I feel like this is kind of a good segue into that. So, let's just start with the Black Widow trailer. trailer. They dropped the Black Widow trailer, finally ring a Scarlett Johansson Black Widow trailer. What'd you guys think of this? I think it looks great. Like, honestly,
I mean, it looks exactly like you'd expect a Marvel movie to look. Really awesome and
badass
fun.
Mission Impossible movie with Scarlett Johansson in the lead. I love it.
Yeah, same. And
that one actress who's in, like, killing it right now, she's in Midsommar, she's in Little Women, and I'm trying to remember her name.
Florence
Pugh.
P-U-G-H. I don't know how her name's pronounced, but yeah, she's in everything, and she's awesome.
She's in everything. What is she? Dude, her agents are killing it. Like,
seriously, she's been in, like, in the past 2 years, she's been in, this will be like the fourth or fifth movie that's going to be huge that she's going to be in.
Dude, seriously. So, I mean,
yeah.
And like, her character in the comics is just, she's like the other Black Widow. And with Scarlett Johansson gone, is this sort of like her going to take over the helm? I don't know. See, this is what happens with my brain. I start to think about all that stuff. And I've only watched the trailer once.
Exactly what it's doing, what it's designed to do. It's mm-hmm. creating interest in the film and speculation and just giving us enough to, like, whet our appetites.
Well, and I really, like you said, just getting enough. Half the trailer is old footage.
Yep.
Yeah.
From previous movies.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So there's only just a bit that is new stuff.
A minute worth of
we
stuff.
We know from Agent Carter, we know from Age of Ultron, and we know now from just the kind of the information they give us in this trailer that Black Widow is her code name, but she's not the only Black Widow. She's not the only assassin trained by the Soviet Union to be a Black Widow. The original, I mean, there was quote unquote Black Widow character in Agent Carter. She was sent to infiltrate.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sent to infiltrate the SSR or whatever, the early version of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Agent Carter series. So Black Widows have existed for decades, and clearly they are establishing for this movie that there's a community that still exists. They're aware of each other. There are varying kind of seniority levels, because Rachel Weisz, who is awesome in everything as well, she appears to be another Black Widow. Because she shows up, and she is she's a older than Scarlett Johansson. Her character clearly has some seniority, so there seems to be a community of Soviet trained super assassins out there, and they're gonna a bunch of them are gonna interact for this movie, which is just gonna be wild. It's gonna be crazy.
And then David Harbour playing Red Guardian,
which
is Soviet Union's in America, which is crazy. And I love David Harbour, and he just looks like insane, which is fun.
He's good in
everything.
The Taskmaster, which I keep getting, like, I don't know if this is like real internet buzz or like people just griping about Taskmaster looking silly or like not looking how they expected. And so
I haven't seen that either.
I haven't seen a lot of chatter surrounding the trailer. I'm glad that we're going to get this movie. It's going to hopefully tell an interesting tale, of the Black Widow's past.
And I like where they put it. They put it in the timeline. They put it after Civil War, right?
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
It's filling in the time when she, is persona non grata, she's on the run, or she's underground or whatever. I like the fact that it's plugged into sort of the timeline that way.
Yeah, that looks fun. I mean, Scarlett Johansson owns that character, dude. She's so good.
It's gonna be lots of flashbacks to her training and all that kind of stuff. I love all that. Mm-hmm. And it'll be, I hope they do a really good job with it.
You said Mission Impossible. It definitely seems like an espionage film. There's a new Bond trailer that dropped out there too.
Yes.
No Time to Die. Is that what it is?
No Time to Die. Directed by, I think he's not in our kind of upper echelon yet, but Corey Fukunaga. He did season one of True Detective.
Yep.
He directed every episode of that.
Which is a bonkers. I love that first season.
Yeah, so. And he is a great filmmaker. So him doing a Bond movie, kind of getting this a very original take. I mean, Sam Mendes has done two of the last four Bond movies or something, and he's a great director, but
yeah, he's a great
kind
director.
Of having this younger kind of sensibility coming in to direct a Bond movie.
Spectre's not very good.
Fukunaga.
Cory Fukunaga, is that how you pronounce it? I'm sorry. Yeah. Fukunaga, yeah. But he's great. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, Spectre's Spectre.
It's just kind of
Skyfall is the best of them all.
Skyfall
is by far
is amazing.
So good.
Yeah. Spectre doesn't quite live up to
the rewatchability of Skyfall is pretty great. Off the chart. It is so good.
I love that movie.
Yeah, me too. So, but yeah, but
I'm a huge Bond fan, and I'm very excited about. And this is Craig's last one, so I hope that they bring it home. And it's a great one.
It's a nice send off for Daniel Craig.
I'm a huge fan of the series.
Yeah,
so.
I can't wait. I've loved Bond and kind of the iterations that they've put him through. To think about where he was for Casino Royale and where kind of they evolved even this segment of the Daniel Bond character or Daniel Craig character for Bond.
Yep.
You know, with kind of the highest high with Skyfall. It's just, yeah.
I like that they've made a connection because you sort of watch the older stuff and like, you know, they're not the same guy necessarily, but it's sort of like, I love that Daniel Craig's character has kind of an arc throughout the movies, and like the last movie has affected him in the new movie. Like it's much more of an interesting take, and I think that's partly because you know, the overlap with Mike Marvel movies and their success is like, instead of just like starting like brand new, he's just like, oh, I'm Bond, here I am again, and I'm going to get an adventure. Like he's got like stuff that's like impacted him from the past movies.
Well, and I think that we're in a position too where the audience is just a little bit. Bond has to grow up a little bit. He can't be the same kind of misogynist that he's always been. People don't want to watch somebody like that. It's not, you know, they're a little bit tired of it. You want him to have actual real relationships with the women in the movies. You want the women to have depth. You don't want them to be disposable.
And these movies definitely have been impacted by the Bourne series being this like gritty, darker espionage movie, like more like modern stuff.
And oh yeah, I mean,
he's not flying through the air on like a wind sail down a giant wave. You know, the world is not enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like stupid shit like that. He's doing like real
it's more
stuff.
It's much more grounded. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm excited for the Bond trailer. I have no idea what the movie's about. I know that it seems like it's a direct sequel to Spectre. And, you know, has elements of what stuff that was proposed in Skyfall as well coming into it. But I have no idea what the movie is going to be about. So, but I'm still excited for it. And it's Daniel Craig's last movie.
So Christopher sent us the Mulan trailer. And I just actually watched it before we started recording. I hadn't watched it. I watched it once. I mean, I'm not really a fan of the Mulan cartoon. But
I've only seen the movie once.
You're not?
Not really. No.
Oh my God. It's in the top five of my favorite Disney movies.
Really?
Wow.
What makes you like the cartoon so much, Christopher?
The music is incredible. The animation is incredible. I love the examination of the cultural and gender issues.
Yeah.
I just like sort of that, you know, the dumbass comedic dragon. I could
Eddie Murphy. Dishonor on you, dishonor on your cow.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Eddie Murphy does a good job, but he does. But I just like the tale and I love the idea of overcoming stereotypes. Overcoming ignorance imposed challenges.
Yeah,
that appeals to me a lot. And again, I'm a huge fan of the music.
Yeah.
And I have high hopes. I have high hopes for the live action. I think it looks awesome, and I love
the
I love those movies, martial arts movies in that style.
Yeah, that's the point. It's a martial arts movie.
It's not a musical.
There isn't going to be any singing.
Yeah.
So it's not like the Disney remakes of, you know, the last few years, like Lion King, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast. They have been kind of direct, you know, reinterpretations of the movie, kind of playing on the strengths. They still have the songs, maybe adding some additional music.
The trailer suggests that they're going to use the soundtrack as the movie's music. Like, it'll be the soundtrack.
The characters will not sing.
It's awesome. No, and I'm totally down with that. I want it to be too. I want it to be a crouching tiger.
Yeah.
I want it to be a Crouching Tiger movie. But it'll
It's Disney's, a Disney-fied version of it.
It looks like that wushu kind of, you know, martial arts.
Here's my problem with it, I think, Christopher, is it's a war movie that's made by Disney, so it kind of can't go to the place it needs to go, like, where you're just straight up killing people and murder and because it can't just reach that point where it's like she's stabbing people or like these people all get killed in this battle. Like, you can't have like a big bloody battle. Then that's what I want. It's not a big bloody battle, but you know, like, they're not going to show a bunch of people playing. Like, they're not going to show like a cool, like, sword fight.
I think you're missing the point a little bit, dude, because think about the most famous and kind of most well-received wushu movie, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, is completely bloodless.
No,
there's
a
couple of deaths, but what I'm saying is
like, Disney wouldn't even show those deaths. It can't go to the point that it needs to go to. You need to have some stakes. And it's like, if you know that no one's going to die,
Disney movies all the time. Bambi's mom gets shot.
Yeah, but you never see it. You just see like a dead. Like,
yeah, no, it's an interesting challenge for them because I'm sure that they've had this conversation.
It's a war movie.
It's a war movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't show any deaths. Like, you can show.
Well, they probably, my guess is they have to show some. Mm-hmm. And the question will be is how do they arrive at the balance?
I think that was my problem with it. I love everything that you're saying about like, you know, overcoming, you know, gender stereotypes. And I do love the music. I hated Eddie Murphy's character, so I'm glad that's not in there. But I love how it's like a kung fu movie. But like, I still am like, ooh, like,
here's the question that I have.
They're going to go to a line and then they're going to stop. And I don't like that they have to stop at that line. You know,
they're adding a new character. Like, it looks like there's a sorceress that they're adding to this movie.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist in the animated film. So
yeah,
I don't know why that means
they're changing it.
Yeah, exactly.
In a significant way.
Very significant.
And the other thing, I think that this is sort of a broader philosophical point on my part, that I'm just tired of white Western men movies.
I can't disagree with that.
Honestly, part of why it really appeals to me is I like to see different representation in movies now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm done with the leading white man. I just am. It's boring, and it just sends all the sort of wrong cultural signals that we've been sending for 100 years, which is our art is made by and stars white men.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is dressing. And that's, those days need to be over. And any opportunity that we get to support new art that is representative of the world, representative of different faces and people, and perspectives, I'm going to support until the day I die.
On a less politically charged or like socialness charged note, it's just tired. We're seeing these movies a ton of times. Like, I want fresh tales, new stories, new perspectives, new directors, like female writers and directors.
Exactly.
Female produced, things, because it's been rich white dude telling stories.
Yep.
Forever.
Ad nauseam.
So it's like, come on,
lots of other people were making art. They were just never shown or funded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So those days have to be over, and sort of this is the Disney machine, right? But it's an element of the Disney machine, which they, you know, I give some Disney some credit where they not. This is also the woman is not being saved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's lots of Disney sort of examples of that where it's not there. She's not being saved, but there's also lots of examples where she's being saved by the man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I like the idea that this is a very capable female character that is the hero.
Yeah.
So we need a lot more of that. So
speaking of strong female characters today, the Wonder Woman. 84. Is it 1984 or is it just 84?
1984.
Yeah, Wonder Woman 84.
Is it Wonder Woman 84? It dropped today.
Whatever they're going to call it.
The Wonder Woman sequel.
The Wonder Woman 2 sequel.
Whatever it's called.
Yeah, whatever it's called. Dropped today. And I just watched it actually before we started recording also. So I'm super pumped about this. I have so many questions.
Yeah,
I've only watched it once. Like,
how is he alive?
Exactly. How is Steve Trevor alive?
Steve Trevor
is
alive in the movie.
In 1984.
He clearly is alive. I mean, he hasn't aged.
Yeah, he's interacting with things in the world. It's not just like a figment of her imagination.
Right.
Like she's hallucinating him or imagining him. He exists in the world in 1984 with Diana having an adventure again.
He's been dead for
70 years.
He's
wearing a fanny pack.
Yeah,
I love
it. A Casio watch.
He's wearing a
and a members only jacket.
Members only jacket. You know, can you pull off a members only jacket now? I kind of want it to.
Pine pulls it off. Pine pulls off a fanny pack.
The dude can pretty much pull off
anything, but
yeah.
But could I do that, or only Pine can make that pull that off?
You definitely could not pull it off.
Damn it! I want it to be cool.
Absolutely not. Yeah. But,
all right. Well,
you gotta be. I could take a stab at it.
Chris is gonna take a stab at the fanny pack.
You're gonna rock the fanny pack and then members only.
Not a fanny pack. Never a fanny pack.
Well, no. I think you gotta go full look. You gotta go members only and fanny pack.
I can't do that. But I could.
Whoever pulled Christopher for Secret Santa, get Christopher a members only jacket.
I will a members only jacket and a fanny pack, and I will commit to wearing them.
That's awesome.
And put it on Instagram.
He's gonna wear it in our family photo that mom
send
will
it
take
to
on
me.
Christmas Day.
I will absolutely wear it.
That's awesome. But yeah, so it's set in 1984. Can we talk about the fact that so Pedro Pascal has become like this genre actor, like superstar? He was the Red Viper in the third season of Game of Thrones. He is currently playing the Mandalorian, and now he's going to play Maxwell Lord in Wonder Woman 84. He's the villain.
I didn't notice him.
Yeah, he's got like very 80s, like blonde streaked hair.
Yeah,
but no, he's the villain.
Wow,
Pedro Pascal, dude, is Maxwell, like legit become this genre powerhouse.
Crazy. I'm trying to remember Maxwell Lord from the comics. That name sounds really familiar.
He's Lex Luthor type.
Yeah,
but he's much more of like a slick operator. He's like an evil multimillionaire businessman type.
No powers though, no special abilities.
He tries to he's manipulative and he tries to acquire power through nefarious means.
Evil genius type, but human.
A little bit
genius with money.
Genius with money. Yeah. With delusions of, you know, power obsession and shit like that.
This is a segue. Speaking of evil geniuses with money. This is a total tangent, but I forgot to ask at the top. I was at a nonprofit board that I'm on, statewide nonprofit board that I'm on. We had our retreat this week, and the icebreaker was your standard. One of the icebreakers was boxes of candy at all these places where you could sit down. Right, there was a U-shaped table set up.
Yeah,
and then the boxes of candy that you sit down where the chair you sat down at has a box of candy. And so the icebreaker was the type of candy that you had at your location was the icebreaker question you had to answer. And that, as it just so happened, which was hilarious because no one knew what the questions were. I had peanut M&Ms at my seat, and the question that was associated with peanut M&Ms is, what qualities of a superhero would you want?
Okay. Something like, that you've given a lot of thought through your entire life.
Essentially, it got distilled to sort of what superhero power would you want?
Yeah.
And so I asked you that question, but I think you guys would appreciate very much the answer I give, which was a deep cut. And I don't think the room is not a bunch filled with a bunch of geeks, right? And yeah. So, you know, some previous people before me in the room said, I'd like to fly, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what I said, Andrew, you will appreciate this. I said I would like the deductive reasoning and intellect of Batman.
Yeah.
And the money of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. That's awesome.
People seem to like crack people up and then there was not a whole lot of jokes about it, but there were a lot of sort of conversation and jokes about flying and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But clearly I had thought way too hard about this question. Because people are like, wow, he gave a real answer.
Yeah.
It was funny. Here's the real answer, and I'll try to be brief about mine. If I thought about this, if I was invulnerable, I would be fighting crime right now. I would just to join the police force. Like,
but that creates a lot of problems for you, though.
Why?
I guess you have to be subject to the rule of law, don't you?
Well, no, I'll be vigilante, motherfucker.
We can get off on a law.
That's the problem. Sorry, yeah. Andrew, what would your?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'm very pedestrian. I would love to be able to fly. I think that would be the most kind.
But like, you could still be shot out of the sky. Someone's gonna shoot you out of the sky.
Run into things.
Yeah, true. You're gonna run into a plane, or you're gonna crash. Like one day, you're gonna like.
It's the simple like boyhood like Just because the Rocketeer is like the perfect.
Oh, advantage. Yeah.
He just puts on a rocket pack and just him having that small advantage. Yeah. He's a dude with a rocket pack. And it's fun. It's just the idea of it just, you know, tickles my kind of childhood, boyhood, whatever.
I was so like in the, okay, yeah, I'm going to give a real answer because I originally thought like as I'm walking through the sort of answers, Spider-Man's powers are freaking awesome, except there are no real like, there's only like 10 tall buildings that I could swing around. Why would I do that?
You'd have to live in New York.
Said it from the beginning. Spider-Man is always a function of place.
Yeah.
You can't really imagine him outside of New York.
No.
Well, we got into that argument when they were talking about Far From Home and where he's like not in New York. And it's sort of like this limiting factor to him where he can't swing through the skyscrapers
added
at speed.
Glider wings to his suit, dude.
Exactly.
Come on. Glider wings. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Sorry to derail, but that was fun. That moment that I knew you guys would appreciate.
Oh, totally.
In my professional life, I got to.
Well, and
I got
and
to expose of, my all uber geekness.
Yeah.
To bring it back to like flight, it looks like Wonder Woman is wearing her like gold wing eagle suit for
a
minute.
That's at the end of the trailer,
And like, does that enable her to fly? Because I mean, the joke of the comics and the TV show, even that they haven't dove into, which I don't think they can do this without being so silly, is Wonder Woman flies around in an invisible jet.
Yeah, if they find a way to make that feel legit,
she can't fly and she flies around in an invisible jet.
Well, we talk about the most kind of cool moment for me, just the most pure superhero moment of the trailer, is when she's using the lasso of truth to ride lightning bolts. Like she's like whipping her lasso and like grabbing a lightning bolt and swinging through the sky.
Yep.
Of course.
I'm cool looking.
Like, I never thought to do that. So that's like brilliant.
Brilliant.
Cool.
I mean, but her,
because it's a magic lasso. She could do whatever.
It's a magic lasso, and she's the daughter of Zeus. You know,
all that god mythology sort of brings to bear. They haven't really tapped, but I mean, it's endless, right? You can make as much of the shit up as you want.
Well, exactly. and then there's a moment with the lasso too, where she's like just in a melee with some guys, and she's like she's doing like a circle with it.
She knocks him over. She's whipping it out so fast and knocks the dude over.
Right, it's flinging so fast that it creates like a force. You know, which is really cool. That's dope.
It's that great example of, you know, people imagine superhero movies to be so silly, but when you actually kind of put depth and thought into how a superhero would actually interact with the world and where you can like use their powers for interesting ways. I mean, that's what comes out of it. It's like, yes, she has a magic lasso. Why are we constraining ourselves to the idea that the only thing this lasso can really do is compel you to tell the truth? No, it was forged by, if you really look at, you know, you look at the origin of the weapon itself, blah, blah, blah. You just can go to these places and be like, what if she did this with the lasso? I was like, that would be so cool to see on screen.
It's an awesome, like, rope weapon. You know, exactly. It's very interesting. And I mean,
and it takes away from the fact that, yeah, a lot of her powers are very punchy. She's super strong and she's fast and she's a trained warrior or whatever. But you add that extra kind of level of fun and dynamism to her ability because she has this magic. She has this talisman that she can use. That's really cool. So yeah. I love that. I love that we're going to it's like Captain America with his shield. Yes, he can throw it and knock people over. But when you kind of like expand on it a little bit and see what other ways you can use this.
Right. It's Captain America throwing Mjolnir at itself and then using the shockwave from the shield to knock over Thanos. That's the moment that you want. He could just throw people in the face, but using it like that is cool. You know? That's stuff like that. Yeah.
It's so cool.
And was that all the trailers? That was all the trailers. We've been talking for a while. We should talk. I did binge watch all of Watchmen, so I'm caught up on Watchmen.
You're caught up on Watchmen?
Whoa!
I binge
to the big reveal that happened last week.
Holy shit!
Isn't that show good?
Isn't it just good?
Dude,
it works on so many fucking levels.
I was so happy that I read the full Watchmen comic before I started the show. I highly recommend that because the references in the show are awesome in terms of the touchstones in the comic. It was worth it to read through that, and the comic is great. So, but anyway, that's what I did, and man, I'm catching all the references. So
that's awesome. Really, I should have done that. That would have been a great way to prep for it too, because it's
it's pretty crazy, pretty nutty. And like tonight is another episode, right? Like
it premieres in like 50 minutes or an hour.
Holy crap. So there's that. I caught up on that, and I got caught up on His Dark Materials, which
I am one episode behind on His Dark Materials.
It's not
capturing my attention like
me either. Yeah, it's okay. And I would say the last two episodes have been its best, but that's like four or five episodes.
I think what it's revealing, and this is a telling point. I think what it's revealing is that it's really, really hard to capture in a script the brilliant writing of the book.
Yes.
I think that the plot is simple as hell.
Yeah.
And so the writing fleshes out the relationships, the imagery, the philosophical concepts, all in a way that it's really hard to capture in a script and on screen. And I think that the movie was the same problem. The show, in my opinion, is far better than the movie, but it's so similar though in what it's how it looks. But I really sort of have been thinking about this, that I think it's really, really hard to capture just how amazing the writing of the books is.
And I'm
enjoying the show because I love the tale and I love all the ideas and I know where it goes. And my level of anticipatory geekiness mm-hmm. is off the chart. Every time I see an episode and I think about what's coming down the pike, and I hope they get there because it's freaking amazing.
Well, here's what I'll say that hasn't really, like, that bothered me about, like, the first few episodes, and the past few episodes have gotten better, is, like, you always feel like Lyra has her shit together from the beginning of the book. She's always analyzing and over, like, knowing stuff and, like, is a badass. And, like, in the beginning of the book, or the beginning of the show, you don't really see that. But, like, the past couple episodes, she's really gotten her like, the Lyra character has gotten... And they're trying to give her, like, a little more of an arc, I guess. But, like,
yep.
she's sort of just, like, taking the reins. Like, she's surrounded by all these dudes who are telling her stuff, all these adults. And she's just like, screw this, I'm going to do my own thing. And you really start to see that in the last few episodes. And so I'm curious because, like, the end of the last episode is a little bit of a cliffhanger. Obviously, I know what's going to happen in the books. But... like, I'm curious.
Great strength of the first book is how it's all Lyra's story. So we are planted in Lyra's reality for the entirety of the book. Mm-hmm. And like, narratively, that's impossible to pull off for a TV series. So they have to make some changes, but
and they have to tease it with stuff from the second book.
Yes.
And they have to fill in some of that as teeing up the next part of the tale, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you on the book, really sort of, she is uncertain for a while.
Yeah.
But then she begins to sort of be more confident. But then I think the show is doing a decent job of she's uncertain. She gains a little bit of confidence, but then it's like, oh my God, I'm in trouble now. And then, as we know from where it goes and how the first book ends, there is the ultimate betrayal and fall for her that is coming. And everything that she thought she was confident in, and that what she thought she knew, is all torn away, right? And so
that, and if they pull that moment off in the show, it for all of its kind of emotional, it's going to be gut-wrenching. It's going to be incredible television.
I truly hope they do, because that's the payoff of that book, is that the last bit where it's like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. So
they create a reality in the story where anything becomes possible, and everyone is out for themselves, essentially.
I'm with you, Andrew, that, like, it is, I'm kind of just like going through it because I know what's coming, and I want, but, like, someone who hasn't read the book who doesn't know what's coming, are they still watching the show? I haven't watched, like, you never hear about streaming numbers or if people are, like, enjoying it.
Yeah, I haven't had any conversations with anyone who's watching the show and is not. Right. Yeah, the only people I know actually that are watching the show are the three of us, to be honest.
Because like,
well, it definitely doesn't have the buzz that, say, Game of Thrones.
Right. Or Watchmen has. So, I feel like Watchmen, every time a Watchmen episode drops, there's a lot of, like, there's an IGN article about it. I've been avoiding it. Yep. There's a lot more Polygon.
It's the simple fact of, it's a Damon Lindelof brand, and Damon Lindelof has made some of the best television of the past 10 years.
Well, yep. Watchmen is weird bonkers. Dude, seriously, that episode where she takes the nostalgia drug and you just see
it's one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen.
I totally agree. That episode
I've ever seen.
Incredible.
Yep.
It's so good.
I saw an article a Vanity Fair article. It was linked on Twitter that called that episode the best superhero origin story of all time. They made the declaration that was the best origin story ever put in any medium.
I honestly had
to stop and think, and I'm like, that's not an unreasonable thing to say. I agree. Yeah, and it's not some stupid fan site. It was Vanity Fair writing TV critic wrote that article.
Absolutely one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen.
Well, and there's this weird connection. I saw this article and I just skimmed it, honestly, so I don't remember who was in it, but they were talking about The Boys, Watchmen, and they reference another, oh, the Tick being like these like superhero exhaustion, like in this going through, you know, Marvel movies and DC movies and all this stuff. And then these other like superhero tales that are like darker, grittier, like have a more nuanced take. And they're set in different universes, and they're just sort of like, you could tell different stories. We don't have to all be like bubblegum and cape.
Yeah, no, I mean, and we're getting to the point where the superhero genre, like sci-fi, mm-hmm. is a place to set your story. So
right.
one of the best lines I've ever heard anybody say anything about, they were talking about Battlestar Galactica at the time. They said sci-fi is not a story. Sci-fi is your setting. So mm-hmm. and you can tell any kind of story you want inside that kind of setting. You just have to be willing to do that. If you don't just fall into the pitfalls of a sci-fi story, you can mm-hmm. you can do interesting, weighty stories with a sci-fi genre. That's the same thing they're doing. That's Watchmen that's what the comics did, and that's what mm-hmm, the TV mm-hmm. show is doing. This isn't my thought. I forget who it was, but it's not my original thought. It's the Watchmen TV series is simultaneously deconstructing, and it's a warning against masked heroes mm-hmm. and a celebration of masked heroes. They're right. deconstructing and making it so you are supposed to be scared of masked heroes and how they're really not a healthy thing. But at the same time, they're celebrating a masked hero. And it's a very delicate balance that they've found with the TV show.
That's the theme of the comic. That's sort of...
Absolutely.
Like the original comic is that wholeheartedly. It's like, this is a dark universe which has gone off the rails. And it's got the extremes where it's like, people are dressing up to do... Like, the Night Owl character is like this pure good guy who's trying to do stuff, but you also have the comedian who's the guy who just wants to beat the shit out of people.
And rape women.
And do terrible things with his power that he's... And he can wear a mask and whatever he wants because no one can stop him.
The theme they're built... the theme they build in the cops wear masks to protect themselves. And mm-hmm. Regina King as Sister Knight being this cop who wears a mask and is 100% badass. But at mm-hmm. the same time, the KKK wears masks to hide who they are.
Right.
And the 7th Cavalry wears masks to hide who they are. So you have these two opposing factions that are both hiding who they are for different reasons. And the mask changes you and how you approach being who you are. Mm-hmm. It's... very, I mean, Batman does that on a certain level too. I mean, the Dark Knight and the Batman series does this, but having it sustained over several episodes of television and having such, having the creative kind of vision that Damon Lindelof has and his sensibilities, it's just, it's been a revelation for me, this TV show.
That episode's got so much to talk about too with the whole this African-American man wearing white makeup over his eyes. So it's a
to hide his race.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Like, the crazy layers there.
Amazing. Yeah.
The image associated with that and kind of the implications of the original superhero being a black man who has to hide the fact that he's black, but he has, this outlook and drive to protect his people. But at the same time, mm-hmm. he wouldn't be as effective if everybody knew he was, even though he's wearing a mask, you still know enough about him to know he's either a black man or a white man, and people wouldn't look at him the same way knowing that he was a black man. Mm-hmm. It's just so wild. The direct taking on race directly as a central theme for its heroes has been great. I've loved every minute of it, really.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
no, it's a really good show, but
it's wonderful. So,
do you have some trivia for us?
I do, and we've overlooked this a little bit, little sidebar. I brought this up to Christopher this week. Season 4 of The Expanse drops on Prime Video this coming Friday.
Yes.
Oh, definitely going to be watching that.
This coming weekend, I'll be binge watching the shit out of that. So. And then the weekend after that, December 20th, The Witcher drops on Netflix.
Oh shit!
Also awesome. Shit.
Oh yeah, we'll that'll be binged over the weekend for sure.
Oh,
when
yeah.
We're here.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So much good
cramp in my Star Wars saga.
Exactly, because you're gonna want to watch The Expanse.
That's to watch The Expanse immediately.
That's why I'm gonna do. That's why you do one a day starting today.
No, one I know. Day. I'm with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. So in preparation,
and the interesting thing which I will be interested to see how they do it is that the story they're telling with this season is my least favorite of all the books.
Yeah, it will be interesting.
Yeah, and so
the Bowl of Burn is a bit of a rough book.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll
so
see.
And so I'm really, I mean, it's just grounded on a planet, right? For most of it. But they've done a good job of, they will change the narrative, right? And they'll speak about sort of those who aren't there and what's going on sort of back in Sol system, right? But it'll be interesting to see sort of how they approach it. Because I hope that, and I trust, because they've been so good at the show, that they will make it really interesting. So I'm looking
honestly, it's probably one of the best sci-fi shows that's going been going, and it's so sad to hear that it was canceled, and I'm really glad that Prime is picking it up. And
absolutely,
if you haven't watched it, you should go watch The Expanse. Holy crap, it's so good.
Subscribe to Prime
and watch The Expanse.
Yep.
So in that,
not a paid endorsement, not a paid
endorsement. Hashtag not an ad. So in the spirit of one of our favorite shows coming back and premiering on Prime, I think one of the reasons we love the show so much is that the world feels so fleshed out and real.
Yeah.
And it's such hard, good science fiction. So in that spirit, your question today is from the lore of The Expanse. We know that the drive systems that are ubiquitous throughout the human solar system allowed the human beings to populate the belt, to create colonies, and an extremely efficient ability to traverse the solar system itself. It was invented by a Martian. What?
Oh no!
Is the inventor's name who created the highly efficient drive system that allowed humanity to settle the solar system?
Eisenberg.
Is that it? It's a really cool episode because he's like sitting in the thing and like he's just testing a new way, and he ends up going like super, super fast, but ends up killing him. Spoiler alert. But
Eisenberg is your guess.
I had nothing. That's definitely Chris's answer. Like I had no guess. So
okay, you got no guess?
Yeah.
He's a Martian. He's a drive engineer named Solomon Epstein.
Epstein! God Epstein dang it. I knew it started with an E. Oh,
yep. Man. You were close. You were there. And I mean, you kind of pick a Jewy name, and he is a Jew.
Okay.
I'm just saying. But his character's Jewish. That's part of his backstory. Is he's Jewish.
Yes.
So, Solomon Epstein, he invented the highly efficient drive that humanity utilizes to settle the solar system. So
cool. Such a cool. And I love that they show that in the show. And it's just talked about in the book a little bit, and then it's like this really cool segment.
There's a short story that exists that tells the story of how Solomon Epstein invented the drive.
Yeah, really cool. And that
the writer wrote. So
I love that. Thank you. If you'd like to help Andrew with this trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You should email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. For questions, comments, tell us what you thought of Rise of the Skywalker, or whenever you see it. And follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek at twitter.com, brothersgeekpodcast on Facebook, and brothersgeek.com for all your...
Our next episode will be after we've all seen Rise of Skywalker.
And two more Mandalorian episodes.
Yep.
Two more Crazy. Mandalorian episodes.
Crazy town.
So never forget that Han shot. We didn't even talk about this in the Mandalorian. Not in the Mandalorian. Did we talk about this in...
What's
we
that?
Talked about McClunky. The last episode.
Yeah, we didn't McClunky. We talk about it? McClunky.
McClunky,
right,
yeah.
Last episode.
Han shot first, always.
Han shot first, always. Don't...
McClunky.